Welcome to another episode of Friends in Wonder, a place where we invite you to explore meaningful topics without judgment or limits.
Brought to you by two lifelong friends sharing their insights while wondering, how can this help? I'm Joe Luther.
And I'm Vince Kern, and we've got great topics lined up for you each week. So be sure to subscribe, like, and even share with your friends.
Now let's wander and wonder together.
Hey, Joe, it's Friday, so you know what that means.
It's another episode of Friends in Wonder.
Yes, it is. This time we're doing something a little different. We're actually recording this episode via Zoom because Al is repainting the studios this week.
Yeah, well, we actually wanted to give ourselves a little freedom instead of having to drive to various places to do this together. We thought we might embrace this concept of doing things remotely.
Yeah. So we're looking at each other through the computer screens. How do I look?
There's one advantage right there. I'm seeing you through the lens of a computer screen.
It gives you the person. Is that what you're trying to say?
Gives you the option to wear whatever you want.
Yes.
Below where I can see right now.
Okay. All right, Mr. Tubin.
That was the guy. He got in trouble for that.
Yeah, he didn't have a lot of common sense.
Actually, I thought that was hysterical, and I thought that was appropriate given the way everyone went from, you know, meeting in person to meeting in Zoom, and now we're finally embracing that.
Yeah. So, hey, got some good news. Got a lot of really solid feedback on our podcast last week
The
local news deserts, and people seem to enjoy. And that sort of dovetails into our topic today, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, because it kind of ties along the same theme, but in a different, you know, way of casting a light on it. And what I'm talking about is how we're talking about how important it is, not just what kind of news you get, but what kind of news you don't get. And in the local news desert, that is obvious enough. If you don't have news, you're not getting anything about your local news. But today's topic is more about censorship.
Mm-hmm. Censorship.
Well, when you censor something, it's usually some form of dissent. But the point is, if you're censoring something in general, then you don't know what you're not getting, right? If there's information out there that isn't being delivered, that's as powerful, sometimes even more powerful than how the information you're getting is delivered.
And that's kind of timely because recently, and it was a conservative court, but the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Texas ruled in favor of a law stopping social media companies like Twitter and Facebook from censoring their users.
Yeah. I remember reading that headline and, you know, I tend to lean a little bit more conservative, but I'm, you know, certainly in favor of free speech. So I think the argument down there, though, is that these platforms have gotten to the point with their censorship that it's become political. And I don't know. I'm not here. I don't know anything about that case. All I know is that it does kind of highlight the topic that we want to talk about today and show why it's so timely, in fact, to talk about it. And that's this whole idea of free speech, but particularly the need and the right, really, to be able to dissent. Mm-hmm. And I know it's almost like Captain Obvious when you talk about free speech through the lens, if you will, of dissent. But it is something that I think we have to remind ourselves, because if you allow dissent to be censored, but in your mind, you're still thinking, well, that's okay. There's still plenty of free speech out there. What you're really saying is it's okay to have free speech as long as we all agree with what free speech is, or as long as it all agrees with whatever narrative there is. And I know, again, it sounds like Captain Obvious, but what we want to focus on today is this idea of dissent and the need for dissent. So,
okay. Well, so as a journalist, Three Speeches obviously been at the forefront of one of the missions that I had in my full career, but you know, I think we kind of got to go back a little bit and ask, why is it so important? I mean, let's talk about, you know, the First Amendment and some of the things our founding fathers tried to do, because there was, you know, dissent is something that's been with us for a long time, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that really is a perfect place to start. Historically, we know that the First Amendment, I guess there's some debate over what was the First Amendment, but the First Amendment that was ratified, or the First Amendment that everyone agreed to.
The First Amendment we have now.
Yeah, is the one that basically prohibits government from making any law that in any way affects the freedom of speech, the freedom of the press, freedom of religion, and the freedom to peaceably assemble, if I remember it correctly from law school. But the whole idea being that it was the First Amendment because it was such a fundamental part of what the founding fathers believed was necessary for our experiment of a government to work. And that is this idea to be able to speak your mind freely, which they weren't able to do, you know, in the monarchy that they came from.
Mm-hmm. And many, you know, plenty of governments throughout civilization and even today. Right.
So they knew the fundamental importance of.
Yeah. They had some interesting things to say about it too.
Oh yeah. Well, we actually, our research has given us a few quotes. In fact, Benjamin Franklin, he said, "Freedom of speech is the great bulwark of liberty. They prosper and die together. And it is the terror of traitors and oppressors and a barrier against them." So, I mean, there's Ben Franklin, who many consider to be one of the smartest of the founding fathers, but saying that, you know, liberty and freedom of speech live and die together. And mm-hmm. I think it's fundamentally true. And, you know, we've got some other quotes, too. I think you had one.
Well, I know that James Madison said, for people to rule wisely, they must be free to think and speak without fear of reprisal.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. And, you know, in the last one that we found is from George Washington, which I think is a little bit more popular. It's this idea that I think he says, if freedom of speech is taken away, then dumb and silent, we must be led like sheep to the slaughter. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it shows there's Madison, George Washington, Ben Franklin. And it really their fundamental speaks, concern.
Yeah. George Washington's quote really speaks to the notion of, if you don't have the information, then you can be led in any different direction. Right.
Right. And if you don't have the right to speak up against something as well, then you can be led in any, you know, it's this whole idea of being sheep or being, I guess, lions, as they say. But you've got to be able to dissent because freedom of speech. I know we're going to be saying this a lot today, but it's this whole idea of driving home the importance of dissent when we're talking about freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is not agreeing with whatever orthodoxy or narrative there is. Freedom of speech is being able to dissent. And now, that doesn't mean freedom of speech is absolute. In fact, you know, one of the things we wanted to, you know, talk about is that there are times when you need to limit speech. And I think that's where the slippery slope starts, is that we know there are times that it is okay for government to abridge or to, you know, limit free speech.
Mm-hmm. You know? Like, for instance, you know, you think of wartime, or you're in the military and you've been given orders.
Yeah, you got a chain of command, right?
Chain of command, right?
Right. You don't want a debate in the middle of a war, or really, for that matter, and probably most any kind of law enforcement, when you're in, you know, the throes of an emergency that involves, giving orders and taking orders, the last thing you need is to be having a debate right in the middle of it all, right? I mean, yeah. I guess.
Along the lines of, I don't like that idea, so we need to stop.
Right. You have chain of command. So rather than having a debate, you can have the debate later. But a perfect example, I guess, would be in a circumstance like that. Now, obviously, there may be times when your commanding officer is telling you to do something that is a crime against humanity. And we know that happened in, you know, in Nazi Germany. And it could happen in any circumstance, right, where there's, you know, public uprisings or whatever, and the police are faced with the decision, or law enforcement in general, or even an army are faced with the decision of, you know, whether they, you know, their moral compass, you know, permits them to follow orders. But for the most part, freedom of speech does not flow in a circumstance where the chain of command is telling you to follow an order. That's a perfect example, Vince.
And those examples sound to me more organizational.
Yeah.
And then you've got, you know, like, you know, and I think of, you know, you're going to be swimming with the fish if you don't follow the you know, the I'm thinking of the organization. I'm thinking of the mafia. It's just a little.
Oh, right.
But, yeah. But, you know, it happens. It's an organizational thing where you know, and I suppose even in wartime and in law enforcement activities, there's plenty of time to
debate it later.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So the goal is, you know, you've got to follow the orders. But public policy is a little bit different, right? I think you're talking about things like public safety or things.
Well, yeah. In law school, you know, I think the very first example we give in law school where it's okay to limit free speech is the, you know, the famous example of you can't yell fire in a theater, or, you know, now today you can't yell bomb during air travel, any part of air travel. Right. You know, and then the other perfect example of where we've accepted, like you said, as a public policy, the limitation of free speech is, you know, pornography or vulgarity, right? Mm-hmm. So as a matter of public policy or whatever our moral values of this society, we don't want to have certain things on billboards for little kids to see, or we don't want to have certain things on airwaves that are accessible to people who we just don't think need to be bombarded with that.
I'm reminded of the law that they passed along the county in the Ausable River in Michigan.
I'm not familiar with that
one. Yeah, you could get arrested or ticketed for tubing down the river and shouting vulgarities.
Oh, man. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, exactly. So, again, there's public policy. So we know that the idea of, you know, the speech is not, and freedom of speech is not absolute. But I think especially timely today, and it goes back to that Fifth Circuit decision that just came out that you alluded to, is this idea of censorship and when is it okay to be able to censor? And, you know, given the recent pandemic that we went through and this whole idea of misinformation and even some of the political things that have happened recently that don't have to do with the pandemic. I know that, you know, there's been whistleblowers coming forward now from the FBI that, you know, maybe certain things were known or not known about laptops and that kind of thing. So, you know, this idea of social media censoring the amount of information that is disseminated is a really, really interesting topic now. Some might say that it's important to limit speech because too many people have too much access to a platform that can mislead and disrupt matters of important government concern. But
you mentioned whistleblowers, and I think whistleblowers, you know, are very important for a lot of reasons.
They're important because we have always, as a nation, celebrated them. Whether there's laws, there's federal laws and state laws that protect whistleblowers, because it's a perfect example of a situation where you want to encourage dissenting point of views, because in most whistleblower situations, it's usually employer employee, and the employee is seeing something that he doesn't like, he or she doesn't like, and wants to say something but is afraid of reprisal. So we have these laws that really encourage dissent in that kind of a way.
And you got these postings. I mean, you have postings in every workplace that says,
well, yeah, certain workplaces with certain amounts of employees, certain numbers of employees must post whistleblower laws and just notices that it's okay to whistleblow. And what that does is it encourages dissent. And sure, I'm sure there's a number of whistleblowers that are out there that say things that don't turn out to be, you know, worthy of a grievance. But on the other hand, it's so important as a public policy that it's a good example. Like you said, whistleblowers are a good example of how, as a public policy, we want to encourage dissent.
Okay. And I want to stick to that for a minute, because you've got some area of expertise in the judicial framework of this. You were a clerk for a circuit court judge. And one of the things that I always hear about, especially lately with, dissenting opinions from judiciary.
Oh, yeah. We have a divided court. Well, we always have divided courts in the Supreme Court anyhow.
Yeah. And so talk a little bit about, because people hear, so-and-so in his or her dissenting opinion noted this. So if the judges have already voted, or what is the value of dissenting opinions? And, to explain a little bit about how they work.
Well, yeah, exactly. Another important example of why dissent is so important. You know, we could have just regular opinions where it's 5-4 and all you know is five judges voted for and four judges voted against. But to have a robust legal system, there is an opinion that is expressed by the court. Not always. The Supreme Court doesn't always issue opinions, but most of the time an appellate court will issue an opinion, both for the majority, and sometimes there's the option of the dissenting judges to write an opinion. I know just recently when they overturned Roe versus Wade, I think there were multiple dissenting opinions. And the reason we have that is because that becomes the framework of future decisions. I'm sure there's a lot of passionate people out there that want that decision changed. And the way you build upon momentum for that to change from a judicial standpoint is by encouraging dissenting opinions to be written. And not only that, you want to know as a citizenry, when these judges voted 5-4, what were they thinking? Were they only talking about one side of the argument, or were they talking about both? And so when you have a dissenting opinion, it actually acts as an opportunity for both the public and the legal world to know that all these other arguments were considered. So in future cases, you can say, well, no, that was specifically addressed in the dissenting opinion, and it was rejected by the majority opinion. But 10 years later, you might say, yeah, but the dissenting opinion in this, was right on because the facts, circumstance. So in other words, the need for dissent in the judicial system is the same as the need for dissent in general that our founding fathers were so concerned about. And that is that you want to be able to test the narrative. You always want to be able to test the orthodoxy that's out there or the prevailing opinion. And the way to do that is through dissent.
That's and that's really important, because I didn't really give a lot of thought to dissent opinions over the years. You just kind of hear about them. But when you start reading them, it really is upholding the importance of open debate
It's a seed. It's a kernel for the future, really, is what it is.
Yeah. And it's a dialogue that is based on, relatively, I want to say factual, but these are intelligent dissent opinions, right? They're not, I just don't agree because,
You know what? Maybe you would like to think that all of our justices give intelligent, I guess it's beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
But, yeah.
They have some basis and you can look at it and say, well, that guy was, or that judge was off his rocker. It was an 8-1 decision and this one dissenting opinion. But, 10 years from now or 20 years from now, people might look at it differently because circumstances change. And the whole point, though, is if you're really confident in the majority decision, then you should be okay with allowing a dissenting opinion because it helps test or it helps, in a way, affirm what it is that that everyone's agreeing on. We saw that argument and we rejected it.
Right.
Now,
right.
So that's what I think is so important about this whole idea of accepting censorship, because we just came through a pandemic where people were okay with it because they thought at the time that, public policy was so important that we couldn't have dissenting points of view. Mm. And now this whole idea of censorship has almost become commonplace. And that's what's interesting. Now, as I said, I'm all about free speech. You can't get me more excited about a topic than free speech. I don't know if I necessarily agree with what happened in the Fifth Circuit because it's, you're talking about social media platforms that are private entities. And if they want to limit to just one point of view, I guess eventually the market is going to encourage another platform to come forward to allow express other points of view. And I know that's happened. We've got new platforms that are challenging all of the big social media platforms out there right now. So I think Rumble or whatever is the challenge to YouTube, and we've got Getter that's challenging Twitter and that kind of thing. So there's always an opportunity for new platforms. But this whole idea though of being okay with censorship is what I think is the point of this discussion today. And that is that you've got to permit dissent. When you don't, it's a very scary, slippery slope.
Well, let's talk about dissent a little bit, because it was interesting. As I was researching some of the founding fathers and the way that the Bill of Rights came about and their negotiations. I didn't know this, but they negotiated. They did everything in private, and the reason,
kind of funny, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they did, and
ironic.
They were concerned. Now think about this. This is back in,
we want to encourage dissent as long as you don't dissent with us while we're encouraging it.
Right. So they didn't want the Philadelphia newspapers to publish what they were talking about every day, and they didn't write letters back to home to their wives and family. And I remember there was no social media back then. So newspapers and letters were the only way people could learn about anything, because they wanted to do their work and they didn't want to have all of these opinions and dissents. And then believe me, there are plenty of farmers and people out in the plains that didn't think that these velvety pantsed Philadelphian highfalutin politicians knew what was best for them. So, but what's interesting to me though is, and this is my rabbit hole of technology that I get fired up about, is how free speech has somewhat been eroded. And I think social media has played a great role in that. And we are now, engaged on these platforms in labeling and gaslighting, calling, every people who don't agree conspiracy theorists or extremists. And, this whole fire hose of information thing makes me wonder if say retreating somebody is really an act of personal dissension or just supporting a viewpoint or what it is. And the difference between now everybody being a self-publisher and being able to just sit behind a keyboard without attaching a name to it necessarily, or without, you know, any responsibility for what you're saying. And again, this is Captain Obvious stuff, but before social media, you know, you had to sort of work to
get your ideas out there. Yeah.
Yeah. You had to go, you know, you had to go and carry signs and march and do different things.
Well, I'm not really sure I know what you're getting at here, though, because you started this off talking about how the founding fathers needed peace and quiet to articulate what it is they wanted to do. And maybe what you're, I think I hear you saying is that that might be a justification for kind of dinning the noise that's out there, but that scares me a little bit, Vince. Did I get that wrong? Is that what you were trying to say?
I think there's a personal responsibility for how we dissent. And I don't think name calling is dissent.
Oh, exactly. Oh, I get it. 100% agree with you.
I think name calling is name calling and bullying and all kinds of things.
Yeah, good point. Dissent. So when we're talking about dissent, we're talking about content. We're not talking about just, you know, flipping each other the bird. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm saying have an opinion, express it.
Right. You know, free flow of ideas.
Right. Civilly. I will not argue that at a certain point, oppressed groups who need to dissent may need to dissent in ways that are very attention getting. If they've been oppressed for so long, you know, I hate violence, but I'm not going to say that people, riding in the streets for freedom is necessarily a bad thing. I think it there's so much complexity in dissent now.
Yeah.
That. Yeah. You know, I mean, think about.
And you're right. And you're right. With the rise of the internet and everybody having a platform, it is sometimes unmanageable to handle all this information. And I get it. If you are a public authority and you're trying to, for, you know, all the good-hearted reasons in the world, trying to get your opinion or your ideas out there in a way that you think is for the public good, then you're going to have a knee-jerk reaction against dissenting points of view. And certainly there's ample opportunity today for people to express dissenting points of view. And you're right. The problem is if we kind of broad brush just this angry dissent as part of what we need to call from the discussion, again, that becomes that slippery slope of, well, how do you decide what is, you know, worthy of censorship and what isn't? Well, for a while, I thought they were doing a pretty good job of it. They were just saying, you know, if you start using profanities or if it's just argumentative or whatever, I don't know how they did it at first, but I remember at first it was more censorship for the style in which you were dissenting than the content of what you were dissenting about.
Yep. Yeah. And I think you go from a situation where, you know, I remember in third grade, Mrs. Hapke, I think, was my teacher. Okay. And, you know, if I stood up in third grade and yelled across the room at poor little Amy and said in front of everybody, hey, Amy, I would never do this, but hey, Amy, you know, you're fat and you're ugly. Well, Mrs. Hapke would have intervened and done something. On social media now, you can basically do all of that.
Yeah.
And so my question is, where does the responsibility lay? And unfortunately, I think the erosion of the norms on social media are causing people to, in some cases,
go along with censorship. Yeah.
Go along with it. Sure. Yeah. Or be afraid to say anything. So,
Then there's self-censorship. Yeah. Well, no, that's a completely, I think that's a different thing. I think in the example you gave of insulting people, you know, that's an obvious example of when it may be okay for a platform to say, no, we don't tolerate that. That's just like vulgarity. We don't tolerate that. That I think is a different conversation than saying, no, we don't like what you're saying, or we disagree with what you're saying, or that goes against, you know, the narrative and we don't want that. That's content. And, right. And that's what I think the challenge that we're having in this discussion is kind of sifting through what is legitimate dissent. And, but the bigger overriding issue is that it's such a slippery slope when you say, oh, it's okay to censor this, but not that. And mm-hmm. that's what the Fifth Circuit is talking about in their decision. Again, I don't know the content of that and I have no opinion on it. My knee-jerk reaction, you know, is that it sounds like the Supreme Court's going to need to decide this one eventually, because I don't know how they came out in favor of the decision they did. But
I think this was just remanded for further proceedings.
Yeah, but that's so not the point of what we're trying to discuss here. What we're trying to discuss here is that there's become this general acceptance of censoring dissent. And that's a scary thing. It's a very scary thing. And like you just said, not only that, what about this concept of self-censorship and people who now are afraid to even say what they think? Or, you know, for instance, when the pandemic first happened, it was only Dr. Fauci who was able to talk. And then, you know, you started hearing scientists around different countries or even within our country saying, wait a minute, you know, and before long, at first those were censored. And now some of these things that were censored as misinformation in the past are now becoming commonplace knowledge as truth today. So it's a scary thing to say it's okay to censor dissent. And when we're talking about content and, now doctors, I don't even know. I think we've got a lot of healing to do, because there's still this concept of people being afraid, doctors being afraid, other people being afraid of what they can and cannot say. Heck, I'm being very careful about the way I'm discussing this topic right now, because I don't want us to get flagged as misinformation.
Right. And there have been, this is a very real thing that have happened to people when they buck the mainstream narrative. And this is not a political silo or bent here, because it could happen to anybody regardless of politics. So, you know, fear of you ridiculed, you lose your job, your fear of people just abandoning you because they don't share your opinion, or you've now been labeled a whack.
Oh yeah, right. And it's all too easy to go along with censorship when the thing being censored is against your point of view. Right. But the problem is, you know, what about the time when you've got a very strong point of view that is against the current norm? You know, we've got to allow that at all times. You can't pick and choose when it's okay to censor.
I agree. And I think there's a real complexity of civilization that has evolved now. So you have the vast, and again, I'll say it, I'll use the term fire hose, because it's a fire hose of information. I'm not just talking about social media here. I'm talking about everything. So
yeah, the internet in general.
And a government has to somehow do its job in the midst of dissent. And it should address dissent in a transparent and meaningful way. I mean, if you think about organizations, running a newspaper, I always backed our journalists because they were the experts. And if somebody told them how to do their jobs or something, I would say, they're the experts and leave them alone. The same thing happens, I'm sure, in the CDC. There was, a recent study that, most of the people who were doing the work during that time when they were saying masks, prevent and all of the things that they came out with, they believed they were doing the right thing, even though later on some of the stuff may have been proved not valuable. So how do we adjust? How do we balance that? You know, we don't want people dissenting because we're the experts versus, you know, we got to.
I don't know, Vince. I think when we're talking about content, I don't think there should ever be a time when government's saying, yeah, that's okay to say, but that's not okay. I mean, yeah, we identified sometimes when that's okay, fire in a theater, bomb in an airport, you know, perhaps when taking orders in emergency situations, chain of command. There are times, vulgarity in that, there are times when it's okay. But when you start getting into quelling dissenting points of view that go against a narrative, I think that's, yeah, that's a time when we have to, like we're doing right now, regroup and say, wait a minute, is this something we really are all knowingly agreeing to? And what are the unintended consequences of going along with this? And as you said, it's gotten to the point now where people are afraid to express their point of view. So they're self-censoring now. They call that, in law school, we call that the chilling effect of free speech, where you know, and why do people self-censor? It's because they don't want to be ridiculed. They don't want to lose their job. You know, we're social animals. We fear being abandoned or being left out in the cold. And,
yeah,
you know, we don't want to be erased, for crying out loud. So it's a natural tendency to not want to buck the narrative. And that's why we do have these laws. And that's why it was important to shine a light on, you know, the whistleblower laws and the idea that we encourage dissenting opinions and legal decisions, because it's important to have and encourage dissent at all times.
Well, and here's another thought I had is if is anything ever really settled, you know, information theory, right, or wisdom? Okay. So I think we could all agree that everything evolves and that, you know, things change from, they've changed so fast in the last, you know, 50 years. But my point is if we don't dissent, then that means that something is settled because the conversation stops where it's been judged. And right. So really, we're saying it's that circular argument. If nothing is ever fully settled and we're constantly looking for better ways to solve problems, if we don't have dissent, then we just stop in our tracks.
Right. There's never, in my opinion, there is never anything that is fully settled. Hey, when you said that, it reminded me, who is, Vince, the most famous dissenter in human history? I guess this is
Marcel Marceau, because the only word he said in Silent Movie was no.
No, that's a good question. That's a good answer.
That's not the right answer.
That was dissent, wasn't it? No, and it's a matter of opinion, but I would submit Galileo. Here he was at a time when, you know, really religion was running the world, and this idea of God and everything revolving around us, and steps out this man who's got a completely different view of what the universe looks like. That was a dissenting point of view. Like you said, he had to buck a narrative out there that was,
pretty big,
you know, about as scary. And you know what? It's no different today. These doctors that were standing up and saying, no, I think, you know, I see a different point of view here. That was to them probably just as scary as it was for Galileo back then.
Yeah. You're talking about life and death situations. Wasn't there a Supreme Court justice also who was known as like the Mr. Dissent, or
dissenter? Yeah. I can't think of his name. I know he had a son. I can't think of his name, but yeah, the great dissenter. But again, that's, I guess it's just another, I think maybe we're getting to the point where maybe we're beating a dead horse here, but yes, the whole idea of the freedom of speech is not freedom to agree. It's freedom to dissent, freedom to have a differing point of view. And I know, again, it may have seemed like Captain Obvious here, but I thought today's discussion was a good way of maybe refocusing the spotlight on freedom of speech, because too many times now, I think people are thinking, sure, you can have freedom of speech as long as you agree with me. And like you said, the big problem with social media now is this idea of discord and name calling being what people see as dissent. And that's not what we're talking about at all. We're talking about content.
Right. And if we don't have that content, or we allow people to, if dissent is excluded, it seems like it's basically the equivalent to tyranny.
Right. Well, that's exactly what the founding fathers were so they were declaring independence against tyranny. And one of the fundamental ways they thought to preserve that liberty is through free speech. And that free speech means, both sides of the coin. You need to be able to speak on both sides of the coin. And so it'll be interesting to see how it evolves in social media. I still, I don't know if it's right for the courts to be saying you got to allow this, or you got to have, equal access and that kind of thing. I'm not sure I've ever really agreed with that. I like the idea of alternate platforms. But again, I think the government's got to keep their nose out of it. They can't be saying what is, legitimate free speech and what isn't. There's the censorship idea. And I just think people in general, what we're trying to do here in our podcast is help people understand better topics that are important. And this idea of free speech and dissent, especially today, I think is very important to think about.
Well, you'll get no dissenting opinion from me on that one, sir. I'm going to make one final observation, which is to say that as far as technology is concerned, and even our culture, the tools that we have right now have really only the internet specifically has only been around now for 30, 40 years, and in the timeline of human existence, that is a minuscule amount. And let's just hope that we learn to use all of this technology in the most valuable way, encouraging more personal civility towards each other, and solving problems rather than using it to throw darts. And that's my rant.
Well, I agree with that. No dissent here. make our points of view without having dissent too.
Indeed. And I make a motion now to adjourn the court and take the Friends in Wonder discussion to perhaps go have a beer.
Well, listen, I do think though, we're really trying to encourage our listeners to give us their point of view. And I think this is one where it could almost been a fun opportunity to have, live call-ins to get people's points of view on it. And we've been getting some good feedback, and we sure like to hear what you have to say about this, because it really becomes this question of content and civility and this whole idea of how we express our points of view. And I would love to hear what our listeners think about this topic as well.
I would too, because there's a lot of tentacles to this discussion, and we could go on and on and on.
Oh, there are a lot of rabbit holes when it comes to this one.
Well, let's push the stop button for this week. And we thank you all for listening. And as Joe said, please do send us your input, because we'd love to hear what you have to say about this topic or any topic.
It was fun zooming with you this time, Vince.
Indeed. Time to put our pants back on.
Oh, yeah. Gotta go back out there. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
How about if we try that one again?
Well, so ends another episode of Friends in Wonder. We want to thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more episodes, provide feedback, ask questions, or suggest topics you'd like us to wonder about in future episodes, be sure to check us out at friendsinwonder.com. You can even leave an audio comment with the click of a button, and we might use it in an upcoming episode. So please, we'd be grateful if you subscribe, like, or share this podcast. Until next time,
I'm Joe.
And I'm Vince, and we're Friends in Wonder.